Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning on this day after Thanksgiving. I'm Carrie Miller, and I'm interested in how things went over the turkey and the stuffing at your house yesterday. What happened when Aunt Alice brought up her appreciation for the president's travel ban policy? How did it go over when your brother-in-law quoted from his favorite liberal columnist in the Times? Turkey Day or family gatherings of any kind, and this is the time of the year when we get together with family, well, they can create a microcosm of the political polarization that we see nationwide. Remember that study a few years ago that found a growing number of Americans don't want their child to marry someone of a different political persuasion? So we've asked the wisest family therapist we know to talk us through some of this. As Bill Doherty joins me, I want to hear from you on this. Have you had some of those excruciatingly tense moments about politics at your family get-togethers? Are you anticipating more over the holiday season? Have you figured out how to manage those interactions, or have you simply uninvited people from the get-togethers to avoid the clashes around the table? Tell me how it went yesterday. Have you figured this out? Are people being left out of family gatherings because you just don't want to deal with the differences in politics? You can talk to me at 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR, where Kyle says, yes, mom and grandma don't believe Senator Franken's accusers. They think it's a witch hunt fame grab. Worth noting that they're conservative, so we're already hearing from people. Bill Doherty is a professor of family social science at the University of Minnesota, a family therapist, and he's involved in BetterAngels.org, which we'll talk about a little later. Nice to have you in the studio today.
Great to
Thanks
be
for
here.
Doing this
yeah.
on the day after Thanksgiving. Would I be telling tales, Bill, if I said that you, with all of your wisdom and knowledge, have struggled with this with your own family gatherings? That's fair to say, isn't
well,
it?
Well, of course. If extended families are the last bastion of real political diversity in this country.
That's right.
You know, you don't get to decide who your cousin marries, right? And so, my family, like all families, is quite expansive and extensive when it comes. And I've had a chance to practice. The result's pretty good.
Tell me a little bit about how it went when you had to practice this.
Well, some folks in my extended family warned me not to, right? don't go near any of this.
They knew there were going to be clashes even before they happened?
Well, sure, because people know where folks stand. We're in probably the most polarized time politically since, maybe the Civil War. I went about these conversations to learn where the other person was coming from, to get a chance to get some of my ideas in, as opposed to trying to convince anybody, as opposed to going to battle, as opposed to defending my stance.
So that's part of the problem here, right, is that you go into, you in the general sense, go into conversations about politics at a family gathering thinking that if you only bring the facts to bear, that idiot brother-in-law of yours will see the light, which rarely happens, right?
It never happens. Never.
Why? Why doesn't it ever happen?
Because the last person in the world who is going to persuade a family member to change a core political belief is a fellow family member.
Why?
Well, we're too close to each other. I mean, what are they going to run in your life next once they take over that?
Yeah.
Once they get you to switch your political religion, what's next? You'll have nothing left. So family are the last people who are going to change each other's minds. And if you go into the conversation with that in mind, that this is not about shifting somebody, persuading them, it goes a lot better.
You and I have talked a lot about truly engaged and receptive listening. That's one of the skills I think that you can bring to bear in a family gathering where you know there are going to be political differences. How do you define what that is?
I define it as curiosity. I define it as wanting to know how this person, who I have a relationship with, who is in my life, I care about in some way, how they came to see the world the way they do.
Aha. And by asking some questions and not just spewing out answers and doctrine, right? Maybe you get there.
Yeah, if you start with open questions, then the other person is more apt to let you speak later on, okay, as opposed to coming out with declarations and dogmatic statements.
Trevor says, nope, we all just talked about old times, grandma, grandpa, what the kids were doing in school. We steer clear of politics and religion so we can still love each other. I mean, is that what you recommend, actually just banning those topics at a family gathering?
Well, I think for when you have a group of family members together, it can really make sense not to get into a lot of politics, okay, if you know it's going to go badly on Thanksgiving. But I think one-to-one conversations, little conversations, it's really a shame in our country with all the important political, social issues going on.
Right.
If in our families, there can be no conversation about what's important in our world.
Yeah, because I think I'm truly interested, as you have noted, in my other family member, how they got to this place that they're at.
Yeah.
It says a lot about our own family identity, too, and I don't want to take that off the table.
That's right. However, if you've got 12 people sitting around, okay, the weakest link will allow this to degenerate.
And the weakest link is usually what?
The weakest link is the person who is most agitated.
Yeah.
Okay. So these conversations do not go well when somebody is agitated. Agitated as in their opening line is, I can't believe you think such and such.
Okay? Yeah.
You're not in a conversation at that point. And so in a group, there's apt to be somebody who goes there, and then somebody else gets agitated, and you're off to the races. So I recommend starting out, if you want to develop some skills in this area, starting out one-to-one without being in a big group.
Okay. So over the pre-dinner cocktails or appetizers or something.
Yeah,
it's
or
a
when you're cleaning the dishes or something, or you're everyone's out for a walk in some nice, strange Minnesota nice weather, right? then you pair off with somebody.
That's when you start talking about climate change.
There you go.
Uh-oh.
There you go.
To the phones here to Astrid in St. Paul. Hi, Astrid. How does this go for you?
Well, the holidays have become odd for me. I have three sisters and, of course, mom and dad, and then my brothers-in-law and nephews and niece, and I'm single without kids.
Uh-huh.
But it's to the point where politically my views are very liberal, but it's the point where I'm no longer invited. Mm. As of last year, I was told I'm no longer invited to the holidays, so I have to spend them by myself because we have a really sarcastic family, so when we get into politics...
Yeah, I can relate
everyone,
to that.
Yeah. So while it used to be funny... And now it's that we've gotten older, my youngest sister's in her 40s. I'm in my 40s. And then two older sisters. So you'd think as we got older, we'd be handling this more maturely. But most of my family is pretty much Republican. I'm very, very liberal. But to have my parents pull me aside last year and say, you know, Astrid, you make too many waves. It's upsetting your sisters. And, you know, we kind of like... We don't think it'd be good if you came. So yes, last year I was in tears. This year I was like, thank goodness. Because it's very tense.
Astrid, I think there's a way to maybe manage getting you back into the family gathering. I don't know. Let me see what Bill thinks about this.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry, Astrid. This is we're chuckling, but this is painful stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And so here's one of the ways to think about it. We cannot change others. We can only change ourselves. And so if you want to get back, I guess I have to ask you, I mean, would you like in the future to get back into those gatherings?
Yeah, Astrid, do you want to be back as part of the family?
Yesterday, I was really content by myself. I mean, I used to get so nervous beforehand and then, you know, be a big eruption of political talk and, you know, based on our professions or... You know, talking about welfare rights and my view on that. Yesterday I felt at peace.
Mm-hmm.
Last year when it first hit, I was in tears. I was also much more sarcastic and much more adamant about my point is right. And now I kind of feel calm and more accepting, to be honest. So if it happens, if we get along again, cool. I don't think I'll busting up the table. I have to admit, I'm somewhat at fault, of course. So I think I'm going to let it ride for a bit.
Okay. Bill?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's really up to you on this. But when you said that you realized that you were kind of sarcastic last year, usually when there's in a family eruption and a split like this, there's usually something on both sides, right? It's there's usually everybody contributed to the calamity in some way. And so I don't know what would work with your family, but in general, going in with the attitude you were just talking about, like I'm at peace with where I am, they're where they are. I'm not going to take the bait. See, a lot of this is you take the bait. Okay, so somebody throws out something in immigration, and then you say, what?
I can't believe you just said that. Right.
And so you can just decide to not take the bait and to view this as like interfaith communication.
Oh,
and you could be
good.
Strong in your religion, but you don't have to be witnessing to it.
I like the analogy here. Because again, in faith, in interfaith communities, your goal is not to change somebody's religious denomination or their essential beliefs.
That's right. That's right. And you know you're not going to. But you also don't, if you're going to be respectful, you don't break into long testimonials about your own.
Morris says on Twitter, women in the kitchen discussed Franken and Me Too. Boy, there's a lot of discussion about this.
Yeah.
And then she says, one of the men tried to join the conversation, but the women fell silent. Bill Daugherty is here with us. I think a familiar voice to you on my show. And we're talking about how it went over the Thanksgiving table with an eye to there are a lot of family gatherings this time of the year. Whether these are happy occasions or, hey, you're getting together for a funeral and then you're seeing family members you haven't seen in a long time. And then there are discussions about religion and politics. And what happens? Do you know how to manage those discussions? Have you had some excruciatingly tense moments around politics and other divisive issues at your family get-togethers? And have you figured out how to manage these interactions? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Here's Katie who says, avoid politics. No one changes ever. And peaceful discussion is best. You can't convert people. And then another listener here says, surprisingly not, it was mellow and nice because we talked about music. I get the impression that there are some people who came up with topics ahead of time who thought this is the way to divert people from going down those paths that are going to be stressful. Good idea.
Sure. And particularly at what I call state occasions, you know, Thanksgiving, funerals, weddings. It makes perfect sense to just avoid divisive topics. But if that becomes the family norm, and so you just mentioned, you know, the Me Too and the sexual harassment stuff.
Right.
This is a very important issue in our country and in our world. And it would be a shame if people say we're never going to talk about anything like that.
Yeah. Gordon says, I find it fascinating how the media want to portray Thanksgiving as one big argument. That's really not how it is for most people I know. Most people have a really enjoyable family gathering. The stresses about travel and bad weather or recent deaths in the family. Well, you're the therapist. Do people come in and talk about this, Bill, that it is difficult when they get together with their families? Or are we blowing this out of proportion?
Well, big family gatherings have tensions that can connect with them around, you know, who cleans up, who is the lazy one who never cleaned up their entire life. And so there's plenty of potential family drama at a state occasion like this without somebody saying, what do you think about the Russians and Trump?
Yeah. So you're saying it's already there, and then it takes is a little match to set it off.
Yeah. The thing about political conversations in families is that there's all this underground stuff that's going on, okay, that these are lifelong relationships. And, you know, usually people love each other, but there's rivalries. There's you never took my idea seriously since the time we were in second grade, and now you're not taking my idea seriously. So in family, one of the reasons you get these cutoffs that occur is that the politics is on top of these underlying family dynamics.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. A call here from Pat in Deep Haven. Hi, Pat. What goes on in your family with this? Hey, Pat, are you there?
Oh, I'm here.
Hi.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about what goes on in your family around this.
Well, I was just telling your screener that I've been in an interracial marriage for over 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and I just find it comical that politics now has to be the most divisive issue. It just seems strange to me. Not that race was an issue in our family or at our Thanksgiving dinners, even extended families. Both of our families were accepting and loving. But in general, people used to say, oh, don't talk about race and don't talk about religion. And now it's, how did we get to the point that politics is the most divisive issue? And how are we ever going to get anywhere in straightening out this country if we stay, if both parties, main parties, are so divisive that they can't work together. It's just sad.
You know, Pat, I hear you on that. I think a lot of what wasn't super politicized in the past has become politicized. Bill, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, Pat really named it really well. In fact, there's some interesting data on this. You go back to 1960, only 5% of people would be upset if their son or daughter married somebody of the other political party, and 35% if they married somebody of another race.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Well, the race, the one has gone down to about 5%, and the political party's gone up to 35 or 40.
This blows my mind.
Yes, yes.
What does it say about cultural change, who we are?
Well, it says that, as Pat said, that we have taken political differences and we've made them sort of basic core human values differences. And both sides do this. Okay, so I've been on two national tours doing workshops between
with
what we call
angels.
Reds and Blues with Better Angels, and I can tell you that conservatives, what they experience coming their way is that if they disagree on a policy like affirmative action, then they are called racist. Okay, if they support Trump despite the Hollywood Access bus video and all that, they're called sexist or anti-woman. That differences about who you support and a particular policy get to be seen as core values. They define you as a person. And the same thing with liberals, that they get this, you want the big government to run everybody's life. You want a totalitarian state.
It's tropes that strike a nerve, I think, and feel like you have to defend yourself because these tropes are unfair.
That's right. And that the other side are kind of evil.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it isn't just the wrong. We used to say you're wrong about that, okay? But now there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you. And when we get to that level, we can't really communicate with each other.
You and I have talked about this off air. I want to say something about the danger of righteousness, which I think in some ways is what you're alluding to. It's this emotion that while it feels good that you just don't get it, you're stupid, you haven't seen the light. You know, this emotion that says, I've found the truth and it's really my obligation to tell you what the truth is. If you feel that in the moment and it feels good, it would seem to narrow the possibility for any kind of mutual understanding.
Nothing is going to come into my brain once I'm in that. So two
in
feelings.
If you're in the righteous mode.
Righteousness and outrage are our two main political feelings nowadays.
Right.
Righteousness and outrage. So I'm righteous in what I believe. I'm outraged by what you believe. And all communication ceases.
Call here from John in New York City. Hey, John. Hi. Glad you're listening in today.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I think for me, and this goes any day of the year now, but certainly these times when we get together and you're eating and drinking and having a good time. I had a Friendsgiving yesterday. I live in Minneapolis, but am in New York for work, and the topics came up that maybe are a little bit touchy, not very often, but they did. And mm-hmm. one thing I've noticed is just how emboldened people seem to be ever more, and I think that's because they practice day in and day out on Facebook, and there's so much news.
Excellent point.
And Twitter, and I really think that people just people are just dying to be heard, and whether or not they're correct, in what they say. But, you know, I think it's an opportunity, actually, for me. I try to think about it as an opportunity to practice listening, to practice skills and debate. And the more people that learn those skills and that practice them at things like Thanksgiving, the better off we are as a people. So, I mean, it may be negative. It may be in the present. But I think the more people practice, the better they're going to get. And I like that about our current climate.
Okay.
So-called.
Two really good points. This I hadn't thought about the social media, but he's right. You're mm-hmm. doing this mm-hmm. every single day. You
yes.
are getting practice in that righteousness and outrage.
Yes. And there are skills involved. I really like his point. There are skills involved in having dialogue across political lines. And so I'd like to get in a little pitch for Better Angels
okay,
here.
Okay, good.
So better-angels.org. It's a nonprofit. And we offer free skills workshops for people who want to learn to communicate. And we give people a chance to practice with somebody listening, how to express yourself in a way that doesn't put other people off. So there is help out there to learn to develop skills of managing these conversations.
You can find a show that we did with Bill for our flyover program about Better Angels. You can find that on my podcast, and you can dig in on the website about what they're all about. Tezuku in Brooklyn Park. Hi, how's this going for you? Good to have you call in today.
Oh, thank you, Kerry. I haven't called for a long time. But you guys are touching on a very good topic this morning. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm a pastor and I'm a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I know that America is part of the continent, part of the seven continent of the world, but majority of the continent of the world, they are conservatives, especially in Africa. It's a huge body of conservatives.
Okay.
So when Donald Trump took over, 99% of the African continent, especially the people who believe in the Bible, was on fire, and it's like never seen before. And we were happy because this country was the country that brought the Bible to Africa.
Okay.
And to open our eyes, and they were seen as the people who care for people who don't have it.
So,
and
Zuku, here's what I would ask. Here's what I'd ask if you will bring this back to your own family gathering. I mean, what does this, now that we've heard a bit about your views, how does this work when you get together with other family members?
That's how we got. When I got together, I got out of house a week earlier, and I was something came up on the news about Donald Trump. And I was saying that he is a very good man. And I go, I got a, like, that look from my parents. And I'm like, what? They're like, if you're going to keep saying that here, you're not coming here anymore.
Oh.
And my little sister go, how you going to say that? And you know, he's want to deport this person. He want to deport these people. I said, but listen, he's not going to do it. He always say it. But he has a heart as a human being. He's not going to send the little kids back.
This is,
he's going to send people who keep coming and crossing the border and violating the law.
Okay, so this is like, we're hearing, I think, a version, mm-hmm. Bill, of what took place in a lot of political debates,
yeah.
in a lot of family gatherings. What do you make of it?
Yeah. What I make is that all of a sudden the pastor sounds like to his parents represented Donald Trump. Okay.
Right.
In other words, somebody who says something positive about him becomes him. And then is almost like to some people, if Trump is, you know, the devil, then you're in allegiance with the devil, or could go the other way if you're a big Hillary or Democratic. So it's like all of a sudden there's not a family member in front of you. There is somebody representing the force of evil.
So let's say you get into that quicksand pretty quickly. How do you pull yourself out without doing some of the damage it sounds like happened in that family interaction?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the most important thing is you calm yourself down. You take a couple of breaths. If you are feeling yourself agitated and getting worked up, you have to first calm yourself down. And then let the other person talk for a while.
Mm-hmm.
See if there's something. If there's something you can relate to. So with the pastor called in, I would really want to know more about how he connects his religion and Christianity and the Bible with Donald Trump. I mean, that was a very interesting thing. He said people were so happy. And if you will, almost like could I for a moment be like an anthropologist, okay, trying to understand something that is kind of foreign to me.
Uh-huh. So less of the you are this if you believe this,
yeah,
which is what we've talked about with Better Angels when we talked about that on Flyover. Less of the I'm going to lay all the stereotypes that are pretty unpleasant on you, and more of the personal, here's how I got to this place.
Yes. Here's how did you get to this place? People love to talk about how they got to where they are. So somebody who is really, really big on immigration and we have to protect the borders and people are cheating and they're coming to this country. There is something there that powers them on this, okay? Mm-hmm. Some notion of fairness and justice and maybe fear, all kinds of things. What is that? And what happens is if you actually listen and connect with that, if you say, for example, so a big concern for you is that people have been waiting to get in for years and then others are coming and all of a sudden they're going to be made citizens. And you paraphrase that back, they go, yeah, okay? And then it can allow you to get into the conversation so with your fairness issues.
You're signaling you heard the yes. argument, you heard the logic yes. from the other person because you're repeating that back.
Yes.
And then you're adding on top of that to a truly engaged discussion.
Yes. If you can paraphrase what somebody says in a way that they say that gets it, they almost always soften.
This is how you work it with Better Angels, right?
That's right. That's right.
Describe a little bit about what happens when you're bringing these people with very strong political views into a workshop.
Yeah. So we have two kinds of workshops. I mentioned the skills training, but this other one is we call red-blue workshops. And they come together. And one of the first things they do is in separate groups come up with the top four negative stereotypes of their own side.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
Like, what do people think of us reds? What do people think of us blues? And then for each of those, they vote on their top four. For each of those, they do two things. They go through and they say, how do we correct the stereotype? Okay, why do we not see ourselves as racist or big government liberals or whatever? And then we ask, is there any kernel of truth? Okay? There's usually something behind a stereotype. So we invite people to be humble about their own side and to say, are there some people on our side that are like this? Have historically, could this be true of our side in some ways? Is it a blind spot on our side? Do we get into extreme rhetoric sometimes? So we invite people. And then when that's presented, each group presents to the other, then the key question is, what did you learn about how the other side sees themselves?
Mm.
And did you see anything mm-hmm. in common? Okay. How the other side sees themselves, not how I see them or my
right.
side see it. How do they see themselves?
What's the purpose of that?
The purpose is to get past the stereotypes, okay, to put out the absolute worst stuff at the beginning of the workshop, the absolute worst stuff, okay, with people saying this is how others see us, and then give them a chance to say how they see themselves differently and is there any kernel of truth? Is there some reason why the other side sees us?
And the purpose of having people own whatever that kernel is of
yeah.
the stereotype is also for what reason?
It's huge. It says we're not fanatics.
Uh-huh.
It says we don't have all the answers. It says that our side has flaws. And when you do this in a one-to-one conversation, if you can say authentically something critical of your own side, okay, it softens the other person.
One of the things that you've brought up to me that I think is valuable and I think about often is, do you call it language of color?
Yeah.
Colored language.
Yeah, yeah. The blue-red language, okay? So many terms that are perfectly good terms have become colorized.
Right.
Social justice, diversity, inclusiveness. When conservatives hear those, they hear liberal blue. The flag, patriotism, American greatness, okay? These are like red. They flash red, 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 red.
Mm-hmm.
And the Star Spangled Banner has become that way. And so what's happened is we have trouble even communicating with each other because we use language that immediately the other side says, boom, we don't use that language.
Bill Daugherty's here, and he's a family therapist, professor of family social science at the University of Minnesota. We're talking a bit about his work also with Better Angels and asking to hear from you this morning about whether you've had some of these tense moments at the table over politics or religion or just the polarized environment that we live in today. Have you figured out how to manage those interactions, or have you simply uninvited people to these family gatherings? And we've actually heard from a couple people who have been told by their family, well, you may not be coming back to the family gatherings. 651-227-6000. This is the time of the year we get together with family, or there's other occasions. There's tension there no matter what, as Bill tells us, and then you lay all the politics on top of it. How do you deal with that? 800-242-2828 and on Twitter at @CarrieNPR, where DJ says, we had a no politics Thanksgiving Day treaty. It was lovely. Are you okay with that?
Sure. Sure. I'm really okay with, as I said, state occasions. as I keep saying, though, if it means there can never be any discussion, that's where I have the problem.
Yeah. Dr. Melody says here, and I take her point here, some people can't avoid politics with family. Ray, being gay and dealing with a homophobic uncle. Not all of us have that luxury to choose to have an apolitical dinner. Mm-hmm. She's right. I hadn't thought of that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you deal?
Well, you don't get agitated. Okay.
Even if you are the person who has come to the Thanksgiving gathering and you're hearing language that is pretty wounding to the way you live your life.
Yes. So if it's family, there's something behind that, okay? And there are collaborators with this. Okay?
Meaning
that if you have that homophobic uncle, others let him get away with this. And so what I believe with families is that they're ultimately very predictable. And the time to prepare for that uncle is before Thanksgiving.
How so?
To talk to your siblings. In other words, if you're the gay member of the family, to talk to your siblings, to talk to your allies, so that you're not the one who has to say, what? Okay? That really hurts.
Yeah.
Okay? And all of a sudden now, people are having trouble swallowing the turkey stuffing, okay? Because there is now something very emotional going on. And then you're going to get blamed for being emotional. Okay, and creating indigestion.
That's
for everybody, right.
Right.
And so what I recommend, if you have a predictable, difficult uncle who says things that are hurtful to somebody at the table, prepare for that and have other people say, Uncle Fred, knock it off.
Wow.
Pass the potatoes.
And that works because Fred sees that he's just not under the skin of one person. The whole family is kind
That's
of
right.
saying, we're not going to do this.
Yeah, we're not going to let you bully somebody
right.
here at our table, all right? And then, so just say, knock it off, pass the potatoes, okay? Don't say, and by the way, your whole life you've been a bigot, right? Because then you're creating the emotional meltdown.
Right.
So families are predictable. And you can go into these occasions and prepare in advance.
I was reading what you've said about bullying in these discussions, where one uses this technique that says if you give any kind of attention to arguments from the other party, you're some kind of fool. That's another kind of bullying, right? Where maybe you're sitting in a mixed gathering and you're willing to be the listener. And then somebody, some other family member pipes up and says, why are you listening to that crap?
Yeah.
Right?
Or if you can be viewed as a traitor to your own
side.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So say if you're a blue, you're a liberal, and you say, you know, one of the reasons why we lost the election is that we stopped paying attention to the white working class.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Trump tapped into that. And then somebody views that as showing weakness. Well, then you have to be prepared. If you understand that that's what might happen, then you turn to the person who just tried to stifle you and you say, no, I think there's faults on both sides here. And, you know, I'm a liberal, okay, or I'm a conservative, but I'm going to own when I see something wrong on my side, I'm going to own it.
Really valuable. Yeah. A phone call here from Jeffrey in Stillwater. Hey, Jeffrey, what do you want to know from Bill?
I would like to know how Bill suggests that men respond to women when they're coming from the #MeToo place of concern and suffering and pain, and you're there over the table. What are your thoughts, Bill?
This came up in my household yesterday.
Listen. I mean, there are so many women who have dealt with this in their lives, who haven't talked about it before, and who now are feeling empowered. And so there's a lot for men to learn from people in our lives who we've known for decades, who have some stories to tell. And it's our job to listen.
Some of those stories might come out sounding outraged. I mean, we've talked yes. about what it means to yes. bring outrage into these conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I'm talking about this with my friends, there is outrage there.
And there might be, but
there might be a trigger there, Bill, in the family gathering. How do you calibrate that, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, so I have to clarify a little bit more. The outrage is becoming difficult for the whole group to hear.
Yes.
Empathy.
Okay.
I'm so sorry you went through that. Or I think it's time we talked about that. Soften your voice, empathy. That then brings somebody down from just being completely agitated and outraged.
Let me grab a call here from Jill in Fargo, North Dakota. Hey, Jill. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was just telling your screener that I just moved here from the East Coast, from Connecticut. And my sister is very, very conservative. And we ended up eventually, her husband even more so, not being able to have, you know, dinners like this together, because I think part of the reason is that although I consider myself a liberal and I feel very passionate about certain things, there's times that people say things and I say, I understand how you feel about that.
Uh-huh.
You know, that they would be saying, as long as, you know, I mean, there are times that it would get nasty, but because I said, I get that. I understand what you're saying. It kind of took the path. Oh, you're really not a liberal.
You're talking about what we were talking about. Yeah.
You really see our point of view.
Yes. Yes.
And you must not really feel that way. No, I really do have strong feelings about being pro-choice. I do feel strongly about diversity issues, and I do feel strongly about immigration issues. But I do understand why you would feel the way you do.
That's magic. In dealing with differences, being able to say, I get where you're coming from. That you're not just a completely foolish, deluded human being. There is something there that you are seeing or experiencing.
Call here from Justin in Springfield. Hi, Justin.
Hi. Hey. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Glad you called.
Thank you. Thank you. So here are some thoughts I want to share, and then I would like to listen to your thoughts on it. I've been listening a while, and there's so many interesting topics. So the one I would like to bring up that I don't know gets as much attention as it should, but there's a lot of fighting, obviously, between Democrats and Republicans. But what I find very interesting is the fighting, essentially, between corporate Democrats and more liberal Democrats, if you want to, the Hillary supporters versus the Bernie supporters, specifically when it comes to, for example, the Donna Brazile bombshell. Are you aware of all that controversy that caused?
Yeah.
It is fascinating because it really is dividing a party, because the one previous caller had said, I am a liberal. True, but there's even within liberals, there's different degrees. Some people want universal health care. Some people want universal college. Some want, like, it just, I think it's fascinating that there's a split. In fact, I don't know if you've heard of a group called the Justice Democrats.
Oh, yeah, I'm aware of that. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, they're primarying 17 or 18 or even more Democrats that they view aren't living up to Democratic ideals.
Right.
And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Donna Brazile bombshell about how, again, depending on your point of view, but long story short, she gave money to help keep the Democratic
Hang on a second. Bill isn't going to comment on the veracity of Donna Brazile, but what he is going to comment on is, so when you have people who think they're of the same political stripe and then some of these fissures come up in that, what do you do?
Oh, those can be even worse than the red-blue ones, okay?
Really?
Yeah, on both sides, because you're a traitor to a cause that I thought you believed in.
I thought we were kindred spirits.
I thought we were kindred spirits, right. And now it turns out. And by the way, this goes on within both parties. So I, you know, we've done the Better Angels. We've done like 40 of these Red Blue workshops, and the fissures between within the Reds, the conservatives. You have your libertarians, you have your social conservatives, you have your fiscal conservatives, and you should be in the room when a libertarian hears somebody who is pro life talk about government law, you know.
Right.
And so, but the same principles we've been discussing, the same strategies apply. How do you listen across differences? How do you see the kernel there that where somebody is coming from? How do you not assign negative motives? How do you look for some common ground? It's the same set of principles.
And by the way, the political parties aren't going to help you with this, because
no.
Bill sent me something really funny ahead of our conversation. The Democrats, the National, I think, Democratic Campaign Committee put this out. Is that
Congressional Committee?
Okay, got it. All right. So this is to get Democrats elected to Congress. And it was titled, Know Your Stuffing, A Guide to Surviving Thanksgiving with Your Republican Family. And it's this colorful chart about all these specifics of what you're supposed to say when the Republican
yes.
says Obamacare is in a death spiral, it should be repealed. And then there's like four responses to that. And what did you make of this, Bill?
I just chuckled because it's so naive in terms of family dynamics.
Exactly.
It is not about the facts, thank you.
Right. I mean, here another one is climate change is fake news. And then there's like three responses.
Yes. 90% of climate scientists.
It's not going to work.
No,
that's the problem.
No. And part of what I learned on our Better Angels bus tours is that a fault line for liberals is to come across. Let me explain this to you. Let me give you some more facts.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. To get
right.
it into your dim little brain. And then what Reds do is they testify. They just make declarations,
right.
okay, that they don't necessarily have to feel they have to back up. And so, wow, they talk past each other.
Call here from Dave in Brooklyn Park. Dave, you have a few things that you do to try to diffuse these polarized discussions. Is that right?
Yeah. When I was a student in college working with student administrative kinds of stuff, we'd be talking to power. And somebody pointed out to me that a phrase I used a lot was, help me understand how that works in this situation.
That's
and then
good.
That made a clue mm-hmm. that I had listened to what they'd said, and I wasn't going to throw out necessarily a straw man argument or some extreme anecdote, but I just wanted to have them explain back to me in their words how that worked. And sometimes as they explained it back to me, they realized, oh, okay, in that situation, I guess we haven't really covered that or something.
Mm-hmm.
Other times they wouldn't, and they would just state their really high, lofty goal that really didn't have a practical application. But at least it got the conversation going. And sometimes you got them to reach even a better conclusion or idea than you had because you threw the issue back out there, the problem we were trying to solve,
yeah.
as opposed to what did you just say. But you had to listen, and you had to paraphrase back to them what you heard, and then say, so how does that work in this situation?
And that's really good.
I found that works in students versus professors,
mm-hmm.
employees versus management, even kids versus parents and uncles, mm-hmm. that you're respecting their position, their power, and their thoughts, but you're still saying, help me understand how this works.
Bill, what do
and
you
you're
think?
Listening to them.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And then it also allows you to find anything you can agree with in there before you then go on to state your own view. So let's say you're a liberal and you're talking to a conservative who is making a small government, limited government argument. It should be states that handle, let's say, healthcare and not the federal government. And then so help me understand how that would work. And they would talk about the state exchanges and so on. And then you would say, yeah, I'm with you on the lowest level of government possible that can handle something. Okay, so if the states can do it, they ought to do it. I'm really with you there. My concern is that the states would not be able to blah 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 blah. Okay, that would be a liberal talking to a conservative. But what you've done is you have connected with a core value, and you've said, in general, I agree with you on that value.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, here's where
that's
I
great.
Think it doesn't work.
That's really good. And it forces you, I think, to think critically, too.
Absolutely.
Working through your own views, being
right.
open to other ideas that might shape those views. On Twitter here, Bill, A listener says, I did this yesterday as the outnumbered lone liberal at my family gathering, Ray Guns on Gun Violence Research. She says, surprisingly good conversation. Wow. Does it get more polarized than that?
Yeah.
She adds, employed a number of tactics that your guest is talking about, including policing my tone, mm-hmm. asking a lot of why do you feel or what do you think? And then she adds, and I am a gay someone who 100% avoids political conversation with my family since I politically parted ways with them 20 plus years ago.
Yay.
Boy, she was like doing
Yay.
The Better Angels
Absolutely.
Thing right there at the
Absolutely.
Family.
Absolutely. Love
and,
it.
And it reaped some benefits
yeah.
for her, right? Good yeah. conversation.
A good conversation. You know, we began by talking about when I've had some conversations with relatives. There's some relatives I've had better conversations with since Donald Trump's election than I'd had in decades.
That makes sense to me, right? Kathy and Afton here on the phones. Hi, Kathy. How does this work for you? Oh, we lost her. Okay, she said, I think she called in to say that her family has a code word
mm-hmm.
to diffuse things when it gets tense. And Kathy, I'd love it if you tweeted me what the code word is. Can you do that? It's @CarrieMPR. What do you think of the idea of that?
Yeah, there's in our Better Angels skills workshop, the last set of skills are how do you deal with impossible situations?
Okay.
You know? And the last skill is you have somebody who's melting down, they're no longer listening, and then you can, like one of the things I say to Minnesotans, you can have a code, how do you think the Twins are going to do this year?
Throw that in at any time
as a code word that let's exit here.
I think Kathy's back. Hey,
okay.
Kathy, are you there?
Back.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's the code word? How does it work?
Mike, we've been doing this for a while at holidays, and it's just if anybody gets worked up about politics. I stole it from the Vietnam era, from the DMZ.
Okay.
And it's NTZ. And all we have to do is say that. Everybody goes, oh, let's talk about something else. And it stands for
wow.
No Trump Zone.
Okay.
What does it stand for?
No Trump Zone.
Okay.
It's the No Trump Zone.
Yeah.
And that quiets, and anybody in the family can throw that in.
Right, at any time. And we all go, oh, yeah, okay, let's talk about something else.
Yeah, and again, group is different from individual.
Mm-hmm.
And I really encourage people to think about developing their abilities to have conversations we as Americans must be able to have.
Let's,
okay.
Yeah, let's make sure you walk away from this show knowing
yeah.
that you are not suggesting, Bill, you just don't get into this because it's going to get ugly.
There are occasions when you don't, okay? You know, Christmas Eve, you know, and you're reading the Bible or something like that. This is not the time. But one-to-one and then maybe little groups to develop our – these are the skills of citizenship in a democracy,
mm-hmm.
to be able
yeah.
to talk – deeply across differences.
Bethany tweets in, I've taken 2 Better Angels skills workshops. She says, I don't know how those softening skills work with my commitment to allyship. I'm not...
Yeah,
what, great. Okay, what's she saying?
Yeah, what she's saying is that it can feel like if you are listening and finding common ground and softening, that you are... you're kind of betraying the cause, the mission.
Okay.
Okay. To defeat and to call out injustice. It's a great question because for me there are different things that you can have in your public work, the organizations you belong to, the demonstrations you're a part of, the people you support, the money you give, that there is a part of politics that is a competition of ideas and a competition between people. And there are winners and losers on that. We call those elections. And vigorously promoting your point of view in that public domain, I strongly believe in it. And there is this other domain of interpersonal relationships where the softening, where the looking for common ground, where the connecting with people and not demonizing them is actually very important, even, I think, to accomplish those other goals. Because if it is allyship means the demonizing of our fellow citizens and the demonizing of public officials, we then corrupt our political culture.
And from Twitter here, Bill, from Cole, who says, how do we deal with monologuers? when you've got someone who won't let you get a word in to change the tone or topic? Good question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you do it kind of like you do, Carrie. People should listen to you.
You interrupt.
You know, you
nicely,
actually,
I hope.
Yes, exactly. And you say, can I get in on that? Oh, that you say something like that was what you just said was really important. Can I get in on that? You interrupt. Everybody has to breathe.
Yeah.
Okay. You wait for an inhale.
Oh, you found my tricks, Bill. How did you know?
And then when they start to interrupt you, you politely say, I'd like to finish.
Hold on. Just let me.
Yeah, I'd like to finish.
If I could.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about this. I get a lot of email and response to the shows, Bill. And a lot of it's argumentative and a lot of it's critiquing, which is fine. A lot of it is, if you only knew this from my perspective. I thought I'd read just a couple of the letters here because I like to do this while you're sitting here. Jean wrote about the sexual harassment shows that we've been doing. She says, a few comments from a boomer who has experienced the complete range of sexual harassment in her life and with a 21-year-old daughter at her liberal arts college dealing with the same old issues. Every backlash has a backlash, and unforeseen consequences, both good and ill, will absolutely follow this watershed moment.
Yeah.
Women need to be less naive about the results that will come and less naive about how long it will take, and angry mobs with pitchforks do not bring about good results. Now, I hear a real commitment to, I hope this is change.
Yeah.
But I also hear some cynicism about the moment that we're in. And I've thought about, now, how am I going to answer Jean to this? And what do you draw from that?
Yeah, that was, I think, a very subtle analysis there. And about the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah, okay? Right.
You don't get major cultural change without some stuff happening that all of us would regret.
Yeah, and kind of bracing ourselves.
Bracing it for us, right? I mean, there are going to be some, I mean, I hate to say it, but there are going to be some women empowered to get some guy they don't like because of this.
Yeah.
Okay? It's going to be very few, but it's going
to...
It can happen.
Right.
And you can have men pull back from mentoring women by not wanting to have... I've talked to men about this in the last 2 weeks. They don't want to... They're not going to be alone with a junior female in their company. So her point, it needs to be heard.
Bill, great as always.
Yeah.
Really good to have you here. Thanks so much. Hey, check out Better Angels. It's
better-angels.org.
And you can find some more skills and workshops on what we've been talking about this hour.
Support comes from Wintergreen Northernwear, makers of all-season outdoor apparel inspired by the Boundary Waters. Functional clothing designed by adventurers, expedition-tested and handcrafted on Ely's Main Street for over 30 years. WintergreenNorthernwear.com.